Welcome to Hearth and Soul. I'm your host, Angela Torres Cuckoon. I'm a foodie, food nerd, opera singer, and the food manager and preservation queen at Spoken, a cafe in the Ravenswood neighborhood of Chicago. I have extensive experience in food service, and I think I have this sort of passion that sits within me, and the more I learn, the more I want to share. And people started asking me questions, and the more questions I answered, the more I realized that maybe I should put it down for others that don't know me and can't ask me in person. Welcome to episode 5. We're talking spirits today with Ian. Ian is back. Yay.
I'm back.
The king of spirits. I mean, that's what I'm going to call you if you don't mind. So I just have a couple of updates that I want to do real quick. I mean, I don't know if they're really updates, but shout outs. Let's call them shout outs. So I've talked a little bit about Imperfect Produce and how much I'm loving that. And I was telling my family in Michigan about it, and they don't have access to it where they live. Well, my sister found this other company called Hungry Harvest that essentially does the same thing and is available in a lot of other cities that maybe Imperfect Produce hasn't gotten to yet. But they basically divert food from landfills, just food that's perfectly good but maybe doesn't look all that great for whatever reason. And they also use a lot of it for donations to SNAP and other kinds of food pantries and stuff, which is really awesome. So look them up if you are in an area that, if you're not in Chicago, this has gotten farther than I expected, which is awesome. You're not in Chicago and you want to look into something like that, like a delivery of produce, look into Hungry Harvest. I think it's just hungryharvest.com. Let me double check that. Yeah, hungryharvest.net, sorry. And it will give you all kinds of great info about what they do and where they are available. I do know if you're in Michigan, they're available in the greater Detroit metro area. They're also available in the Triangle area, North Carolina. So big cities and they're outliers. They are another option, which I think is really cool. The second shout out that I wanted to do is to Trader Joe's. I read this article, and of course, I'm not going to be able to tell you where I read it because I deleted it and I can't find it again. And I haven't done the research, so I haven't, what's the word I'm looking for? Fact checked. Let's say. But I read this article that said a bunch of behind the scenes stuff for Trader Joe's as far as things like their private label stuff doesn't contain GMOs and high fructose corn syrups and how picky they are about the kind of ingredients they allow in those private label products. And as well as the fact that their produce and things that are packaged in plastic bags, apparently that plastic is compostable. It's PLA plastic, which is a high heat compostable plastic. Yeah. But they don't label that as such for whatever reason. I guess they don't have a third party person for special labeling and certifications and that kind of thing. So it's not necessarily just like advertised. They just do it because they think it should be a thing.
Trader Joe's did a lot of things. Like, I worked at Trader Joe's. That was the company I worked for in my undergrad.
Uh-huh.
And they actually did a lot of rather ethical or environmentally mindful or sensitive to sustainability. Mm-hmm. But didn't necessarily contribute to surveys and such because it was either expensive or the standards had changed and they surpassed them, or they disagreed with some of the ethical the actions in an ethical manner for those organizations.
Right.
But a lot of that information is available to you if you go just up to the manager's desk. You
can ask them
all sorts of questions, and they are, one thing about their manager training is that they know their company.
They really know their stuff, which I think this article that I read was someone who was interviewing managers at a particular store. Now, this store was in, if I'm not mistaken, out west in like California area.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's where they started.
Right.
I wouldn't be surprised if that trickled all the way.
Which would be what I really want to know is about the composting, because I think that even though they don't want to spend the money on advertising that kind of thing, I think it would be really great for people to know, because that is a whole lot of plastic that could be diverted from landfills if it can be composted, especially if you've been listening and you've paid attention and you've hooked up with Waste Not Compost and my friend Liam Donnelly. he would be able to take that. In fact, I talked to him today. I happened to see him at work today. He was picking up our compost. And I asked him about it. And he said, you know, I don't know, but I will send out an email and I will find out. So between him and me, we're going to find out for sure. Stay tuned. I'll let you all know. Because if we can start composting our bags from spinach and kale and whatnot from Trader Joe's, I think that's really cool.
That's pretty fantastic.
Right. So we are going to skip our wine report this week in lieu of a little lesson on how to taste.
A tasting table.
A tasting table. Also, I would like to say that we do have our producer, Maureen, on today.
Hello.
Maureen's going to give us an extra palette to taste things with. Mm-hmm. Because Ian has brought us a giant table full of spirits. And yeah. So we're going to taste.
I'm pretty sure we got a picture of it because it's pretty spectacular, actually.
It is pretty. It's and I happen to know that this is not even a fraction of his complete collection.
Well, it's wild. So you saw the kind of the out and about collection in my built-in in my apartment. You didn't see my pantry.
No, I did not.
Which I have a series. I have a couple cases of just stuff, and then I also have bottles of various product with the idea that that would then be what I cook with if I need to cook with bourbon or brandy or something, like, you know, recipes call for things all the time.
Right.
I should have vodka. Vodka actually is pretty helpful.
You should.
Yeah, in the kitchen, that is. I mean, but you haven't seen my trunk, which is embarrassing.
Oh my god! Just like bottles of vodka sloshing around, or like a case.
Three coolers, six cases, and a roller bag. I mean, just so much stuff, and that's all because of what I do for my work.
Right, right, right.
It's not.
I was picturing like an empty trunk, with the exception of just one, like, half full bottle of vodka, just kind of
just
like
rolling around.
Yeah. Oh, I wish. The daunting,
so much more manageable.
Yeah, I live four floors up. The daunting task of taking that out of my car.
Oh god.
Gives me heartburn. You know, the only thing it can do.
Specifically heartburn.
Talk about anxiety. No, thank you.
Yeah. Oh man. Oh gosh, it's just. But anyways, I have a lot. I brought a lot, and very many of these are spirits that I represent. Some of them are a little bit more recognizable. A couple of them are unique, just kind of unique finds, and they're all kind of here to just represent what spirits are generally, because there's just no way that we could really unlock the full knowledge of spirits. And I don't have it either. I want to be clear, like, I know a lot about spirits. I know the most about American whiskey for sure. I'm learning a lot about cognac. But there is just so much. So my knowledge, unfortunately, is spread thin. And I'm currently in the process, we were talking about this a little bit yesterday, mm-hmm. when we met, of exploring wine.
Right.
And learning about wine in a professional capacity.
Right, right.
And God, that is daunting.
I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told you, I only took, when I was in culinary school, I took one class. It was a semester long, but we only met once a week. And it was like a few hours, and we would taste flights of wine, and we had to memorize all the different grape varietals. And I couldn't tell you what most of them are anymore, but I had flashcards. Like, it was in depth, and that was solely for the purpose of a chef being able to tell you this particular dish goes well with a Cabernet.
Whatever
it might be, right? Just to like have a better knowledge of what you like, which I did gain, you know, more insight into what my palate likes, but what I like might not be what you like, might not be what Maureen likes, might not be what somebody else likes, you know, so it's all very, it's daunting, I think, because it's so, what's the word I'm looking for? Objective? Subjective? Which one is it?
Subjective,
thank you.
I'm going to take it a step further and say, for me, what's really daunting is that it's so nuanced,
mm-hmm.
and we had this culture of wine drinking and drinking in general where it was expensive to do immediately after Prohibition. Mm-hmm. So you're not drinking all the time, or you're making it in a bathtub, and that's not great.
No.
What?
That's not great. And then you have like the 90s, which I think all of us can kind of take ourselves back to, and we have shows like Frasier, where mm-hmm. wine is talked about in a way that is just insufferable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Not to, and that's like the joke of it, is that it's the joke is not, it's not insufferable because it's insufferable. It's a funny.
Thank you,
Frasier.
Yes, thank you, Frasier.
The writing team of Frasier. But yeah, it's just this incredibly nuanced thing. And now we're entering an age where wine is more accessible. You can buy wine bottles at $2 to $300, $500. Mm-hmm. And the best wine minds in the world are saying, like, just drink it. Like,
right?
It's okay. It's
just
okay.
Drink what you like. Just drink
a Pinot Noir with fish. You can drink red wine with fish. No one gives a fluke about
it. No one cares.
No one gives a fluke about it. I'm really not sure the policy on swearing.
You can swear.
Oh,
it's fine.
No, so you can swear, but I also just appreciated the pun because you were talking about fish.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I just want to make sure.
I think that for this episode alone, y'all should replace all swears with just puns.
Oh, no. We're drinking a lot of liquor. That is going to hold things up a lot. But actually, that's a good point. I want to talk about that. So we're going to taste. Okay. There's one spirit I brought mm-hmm. that I want you guys to just taste. I want you to do it blind. I don't know if you saw what I poured, but
nope.
Perfect. And there's a couple things that there are rules I have to tasting, which are this is to experience the flavor of it. So please take it slow. Put it on your palate. Put it on your palate twice. You start with a smell. Mm-hmm. If ideally you start with the smell with your lips slightly parted.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how they do it with coffee, but it's just good. Just mm-hmm. opens up the palate. And also, if you don't like it, you say so. And if you don't want to finish it because you have more spirits to try, you don't like it because it's really strong, or whatever the reason is, you spit. Spit. It's okay to spit. I encourage spitting.
Spitting is widely practiced in coffee because if you like max out at caffeine at, you know, 5:30 in the morning and you still have to get through the rest of your 8-hour shift, it's yeah. like you gotta spit.
You gotta spit, and it's just better. Also, I'm trying to structure this so that we go lightest to strongest.
Cool. Okay.
But I guarantee you that we're going to get to a point and I will have blown out your palate. just know that ahead of time.
I wish we had some Topo Chico.
I wish we had some Topo
Chico.
You know why I wish we had some Topo Chico, though? Because it's just fucking delicious. Delightful. It's just great. Yeah.
It's just lovely.
Yeah, that's yeah. really the only reason why.
At my job, whenever we serve a shot of espresso, you get a little Gibraltar of Topo Chico. And it's
we do
great.
That, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
What I do for myself is I'll make a nice cold brew. And I'll put like 4 to 6 ounces, depending on the size of my glass, filled with ice. And then also 4 ounces of cold brew.
Mm-hmm.
A little simple, quick stir. And then I top it with sparkling water.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
It's so delicious.
We actually have a drink at my shop that is like it's like an old fashioned egg cream.
Oh.
But with espresso. So it's like chocolate milk and espresso and bubbly water on top.
Yum.
So we good. Call it Dark Side of the Moo.
Ooh. Oh my god.
Get out.
Yeah. I came There's up with pun. That name. I came up with that name. Yes, I did. I'm very proud of that because I don't work the coffee bar. I just happened to hear what they were talking about and I was like, Dark Side of the Moo! And they were like, yes!
That's it.
That's it. That's so that's what we call it. Yeah.
Okay, so we have our spirit now.
Mm-hmm.
This is no more than you ever need when you're trying a spirit. Obviously, when you're trying wine, beer, or coffee, you might want a little bit more quantity.
Right.
But what we're trying here is a really concentrated bit of flavor.
So, for those listening, this is maybe
a thimble.
It's like not quite a tablespoon.
I would say that this is probably over a quarter ounce, under a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not.
It's like a tiny dose of cough syrup.
Yeah.
Like a tiny, tiny dose of cough syrup. So
yeah. So we start with a smell. And I would encourage you to talk about what you smell.
I'm smelling like dulce de leche.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But there's something fruity.
Yeah.
There's like a fruit note to it.
I get fruit. I get, call me crazy, I get blue cheese.
Oh, I can get that. My first, when I first was smelling it, I was like, it's like vanilla and pepper. So I understand kind of the, like, more savory that you were. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we talked about that. And now
listening to the audio of us sniffing is fun.
So one thing I also want to say, I'm going to ask you to talk about what you smell. I'm going to ask you to talk about what you taste.
Yeah.
Tell me what you taste. Tell me how you can use whatever language you can, if only to just better identify for yourself what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Think broad strokes. I taste dark fruits. I taste fruits. I taste wine. Like, what, you know, just go those big, broad strokes, and then you can better narrow down. I think you would, for coffee, you would probably say the same thing, right?
Yeah. Like, oh, this is, you know, sweeter. This is more.
Totally.
This is smokier. This is blah, blah, blah.
I get and citrus. Then you get into, you don't even like, tell me that you taste limes from the coast of Tuscany.
No, like, exactly. No, we tasted a coffee the other day, and I was like, I took a sip, and I was like, melon. And yeah. Everyone was like, yeah.
Melon.
And I find it funny, too, that working in a cafe as well, that sometimes the descriptions that the roaster gives you, I look at them, and I'm like, really?
Really? Whenever
I'm going to taste almonds and green apple and fresh grass and I'm like, really?
Whenever I see raisin as a suggested flavor note on a bag, I'm like, I know for a fact I'm not going to like this coffee because it's going to taste like decaf. Decaf to me tastes like hot raisin water. It's right. Terrible.
Interesting. And,
you know, yeah, there's like tasting notes are insufferable.
They really are.
I'm going to use that word a lot. And they really are. But again, you're getting those notes from somebody who knows that coffee super well. And the same thing for like a spirit or a wine. Don't think about what they're saying specifically. Mm-hmm. So almonds, it's a nutty, but it's a sweet nut.
Okay.
Grass, there's something earthy about it.
Herby
about it. Right. Maybe it was slightly toasted. You know, like things like that. Mm-hmm. That's just kind of, that's the route to go. And that's really what they're there for. It just sounds so, like, just sounds like they're, like, so deep into themselves.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like, you know, the average customer is not really going to give a shit.
Right. But with that, let's throw some more adjectives out there.
Let's.
Okay. Also, spitting is not graceful. Don't be graceful. Just spit.
Y'all, speaking of raisins.
I got that right away.
I'm good.
Or dried fruit of some kind.
Yeah. Very dried fruit, raisins. I get the skin of fruit. I get more kind of funk. Just like funk sound right?
Yeah. That's so interesting. What are we drinking? Is it at that time? No, I want
one more taste. Okay. So that was the first taste. Wash your tongue. Mm-hmm. Also, think about how it feels in your mouth. Is this a thick? Does it have a lot of viscosity to it? Is it pretty thin?
It definitely coats your tongue.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's thick.
No, so
I wouldn't
it has a either. Pretty short finish.
Yeah.
It makes my lips tingly.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
And acid. It's very acidic.
So this is going to sound abstract. I'm kind of getting like, you said a very short finish. I feel like it kind of just like stops like mid-tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no like, there's back note, if you will.
Yeah, there's nothing really front of mouth. There's nothing really back of mouth. It's very like center of your tongue.
Yeah.
So what we're drinking is a Peruvian Pisco.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So it's not aged. Peruvian Pisco is often not. Actually, I think it's and required.
I almost never have it straight, ever.
Right.
I don't think I've ever had it straight on its own before.
Oh my
which
gosh,
is why I didn't recognize it right away.
Yeah, but you can see like it's a funky. It tastes like wild fermentation. I don't believe this is wild fermented, but it has that kind of like natural fermented taste to it. It is not thick on the palate. It's rather thin. Not that that's just what it is. Oftentimes, a grape-based distillate is going to have that kind of quality to it, where it's like acidic and sharp and crisp and clean.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That can be boring, or that can be kind of nice and cool. And like, mm-hmm. you know, like it just is like a nice way to kind of like clean things up. It's just easy to drink. That is everything from like unaged brandies to grape-based vodka, which exists.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. So that was a little tasting table.
Yay.
What should we do with our cups? Just...
Let's stack them and put them here.
Cool. I'm gonna...
Can I hand you...
I'm gonna hand...
My yeah. short little arms. And well, I can stack them. Great.
All right. I guess... I think, you know, we've tasted. We're going to be doing a lot of that. I don't think I'm going to get as involved with it. I hope, dear God, I hope not. there's so many.
You brought quite the collection.
I did. And you know what? I brought this collection because I wanted to be like, I want to talk about 5 different categories of spirits.
Mm-hmm.
I want to taste 2 things for the most part. Maybe there's a tangent and I change my route and we try something else within that category because sure. we're talking about something. So let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Buckle up.
Let's dig in.
Let's do it.
Opening up the spirit
yeah,
talk.
You know, and if I'm going off and you need to get in, just throw something at my head and I'll pipe right back up. Oh, I'm back in reality.
Oh, there we are.
So a spirit or a liquor is a fermented product that has been distilled into alcohol.
Right. That's for real super quick for people who just don't know what distilled means. There are and no shame if you're listening and you heard that word, you never really knew exactly what it meant.
The act of distilling anything, distilled water, vodka, mm-hmm. whiskey, is the act of taking a product and heating it to a boiling point so that the vapors escape one area and are then cooled and captured on the other side.
Right.
So the vapors go up and they are cooled and they come down. And that is so that you are essentially cleaning, scrubbing the product.
Mm-hmm.
And for water, it's taking all that water, boiling it up, keeping all the crap and shit and sediment and chemicals and stuff that are heavier than water or boil at a higher boiling point than water. You capture that water and you take it into another area. Mm-hmm. That's what a distilled spirit is.
So essentially it removes impurities.
Yes, that is essentially what it does. It has been also a means of preserving. So yes, removing impurities is mm-hmm. going to remove the possibility of it spoiling. Spirits right. don't really spoil.
Mm-hmm.
Like some liqueurs kind of spoil, but not really. They just like lose their flavor.
Flavor, yeah.
Yeah, their flavor changes slightly.
Right.
Because that's lower ABV. There's more water. There's sugar. Like there's just more additive to it.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about this when we get to brandy and eau de vie. But cognac was probably discovered. We can't necessarily say this for certain. But one reason that we distill wine to make cognac is because they were shipping wine and it spoiled.
That makes sense.
But if you ship a spirit,
mm-hmm.
then it...
It's gonna keep. Yeah. Gotcha.
And so, like, you can't talk about distilled spirit. I don't know if this is the right first thing to talk about, but I was really contemplating how to go about this, and mm-hmm. I decided that we would talk about neutral spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Because neutral spirit shows up in a number of ways. As a product to be enjoyed on its own, as a product to be added to another product, to stretch that product out, as a product to water down. There's lots of reasons why we use neutral spirit. Oh, as a product to make, like, canned cocktails. It's very often a base is mm-hmm. a neutral base that is less interesting and dynamic that can then be flavored with natural, artificial flavors, colors, other ingredients, coffee, you know, like whatever it is.
Right. Well, and
it's neutral.
Flavorings used in cooking are usually the base is a neutral spirit.
It's a neutral spirit.
So if you're going to make your own vanilla at home, you're going to start with vodka.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought we would start with vodka. is actually where we're going with that. Vodka is a neutral spirit. And really, you can say all neutral spirits are vodka. Now, you get into the category, like, what? Well, but Ian, how is all neutral spirits vodka if you use it in other spirits? Well, that is a high proof neutral. And so then you prove it you proof it to taste, essentially, for your product. But in the case of vodka, it is distilled to over 195 proof.
Okay.
Or ABV. I'll double check that. It's highly distilled. It's distilled as high as possible to remove as many flavor congeners as possible. So I have here a neutral, a vodka.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say much about it. There's really not much to say about them. Gene Charnas, who is the owner of Warehouse Liquors, amazing palate, amazing man, describes vodka as a vessel for getting drunk. Because there's no, like, as you, like, there's like almost nothing.
There's almost nothing
yeah.
to smell. Yeah.
Yeah. I smell like onion.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm
yeah,
really
if you
excited.
Really stick your nose in there.
I'm really excited to tell you what this is made of. Because I think that will make a lot of sense.
Cool. All right. We just tasted.
You taste it. Get rid of it. It's like talking on a podcast with my mouth full of liquid. Vodka.
You know, that is one of the least offensive vodkas I've ever tasted.
Yeah. You know, a lot of vodkas that you've tasted that are offensive are, they're just not great vodka. They're just not great vodka.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that's all. Whereas this.
I'm about this.
Yeah.
I'm usually not a vodka person, but.
So this is called vodka. So this is actually, so vodka, it's a Polish made vodka from Polish rye.
Oh, interesting.
Which is why it has a little spice on it, a little vanilla. Smells like onion. Smells like cooked goods or like breaded.
Yeah.
Those kinds of things. Those are all, they're all present in this vodka. But there's really not much character to it otherwise. It is a very nice vodka.
It's nice.
And I'm not the biggest fan of vodka. I think it's kind of useless.
I'm not usually either, but that has more to do with my personal history with vodka. It just never sat well with me, but probably because it was always used to mix with something that was incredibly sugary.
Right, and actually that's something I want to talk about. When you mentioned that yesterday, I was like, oh boy, I can't wait to talk about this. Because we were talking about, I think, did we talk about sulfites in wine?
We, not yesterday. We may have at some point.
So sulfites in wine, people are that's a big thing. Like, oh, I can't handle the sulfites. Sulfites are, they are too aggressive on my system, or they are allergic to it. They're just scientifically, with the way that our foods are made, there is a 1% chance that you could have a sulfite intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
So what your
my mother actually has one.
But
she can still drink wine, but she can't have like a sulfur based drug, if that makes sense.
Yes, it absolutely makes sense. So same thing with like vodka or gin. Like anyone who's like, oh, I've had tequila and now I can never have it again because I threw up in my teacher's lap. Like any of those kinds of stories.
I did not do that. I would like to say that. That was not a thing for me. I threw up in a flower box. Thank
it's
you very
not
much.
The spirit. It's overconsumption. It's too much sugar.
Yeah.
It was bad lemon juice. It was something else that like that just didn't tidy with your system.
Right.
And it's very possible for people to be allergic to these things. That's not what I'm trying to say.
Right.
But if, you know, there's a 1% chance of being allergic to sulfites, then you would never be able to have dried fruits.
Truth.
You know, things like that, that people don't necessarily make the connection that there's more sulfites in dried fruit than there are going to be in a glass of wine.
Yeah.
Same thing with, like, vodka. Like, you can have good vodka. I don't know why you would want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of, in my opinion, useless. But good vodka is really fine. It's totally fine. When you're talking about neutral spirits, it's like, that's the only other thing I can say is that it's neutral. It's distilled so high, to such a high proof that you're losing everything that could give it a greater deal of character, but it makes it a perfect base for flavor.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a great way to jump into our next category, where we'll talk a lot more about flavored neutrals, flavored alcohol, or gin.
Gin.
Yeah. You also said that gin doesn't sit with you.
It mostly, I think that I just never really liked it. I never cared for it that much.
I love gin.
Well, then
gin's my jam.
But I also grew up, like, with a family that, like, no one really, besides my grandmother, gin was just not a thing. Grandma loves gin. But the
Grandma
rest of us.
my go-to, like, quick order at a crowded bar where it's like, what do you want? My my go-to is to yell, gin and tonic, because it's like, because it's distinctive sounding, and also I'm not going to hate it.
Right.
Hey, if you're at a bar and you know what you like, order it and enjoy yourself.
Most of the time, I have not enjoyed gin for the most part. There have been a few moments.
I've had some pretty, I really like, the gin that kind of got me into gin was Hendrix.
Okay.
I really liked how, I liked how floral it was, and it was a little bit sweeter.
That makes sense. I can't remember what the base is. I think it's a rye base.
I'm not sure.
I can't remember. I almost brought Hendrix. That was going to be one of my examples.
I like Hendrix. Hendrix is a really nice gin. Yeah.
It's a good gin.
Yeah.
But if we're going to talk about gin, and specifically gin, because, you know, flavoring and flavored vodka is such a treacherous area. You can have naturally flavored vodka. You can have infused flavored vodka. You can have artificially flavored vodka. There's really no indication of what you're really going to get into. Other than, like, if you really know the product and you really know the brand.
Right.
But gin is that. It is a distilled spirit, a neutral distilled spirit that has been infused with botanical oils. And there are two ways you can make a gin. You can make a compound gin, which is what we think of for, like, bathtub gin.
Right.
But also, any gin that has botanicals introduced to it after Old Tom, Plymouth gin, or have ingredients introduced to it after distillation.
Okay.
That gin's going to have a color. Or you can have distilled gin, which is kind of thought to be the best way to make gin. And that's where you've taken your neutral, you've made it, and then you reintroduce it to the still, and you distill it yet again with the botanicals in the still, either in a giant tea bag or in something called a gin basket, where they're like sitting above the still, so the vapors rise through them.
Okay.
Lots of ways you can do it, or just throw it right in. A lot of people just throw it right in. I would do that. If I was going to make a gin, I would just
throw it in there.
Yeah, and just and hire a nice young man who wants to learn how to distill, and he can clean it for me. Because it gets messy. But, neither here nor there, a distilled gin is what you're most often going to see on the shelf. That clear, crystal clear gin, that's a distilled gin.
Okay.
Where am I going with all that? Oh, the styles of gin they're in. So we have a London Dry style. That's something that I think everyone's heard of, everyone kind of knows about. London Dry implies that that gin is a distilled gin where the juniper is the most predominant flavor of botanical.
Okay.
Then there's something called a New West gin or a New World gin or a New American gin. New Westward kind of sounding word, that's going to be a juniper forward gin. However, there are other botanicals that take an equal part in the flavor. Hendrix is a great example of a New West, where you have the cucumber and you have the rose petal, and those are really important elements to the gin.
Okay.
Most gins are rye and wheat based, so the neutral is going to be a rye and a wheat based. And I want to talk about that too, because we had a rye vodka. Not a potato vodka.
Right.
Not all vodka is potato. And we're having, we had a rye, we have a lot of rye gins out there. We're going to try a honey-based neutral for the first one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. You can distill anything.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about a little bit, celiac. If you are celiac, you can probably enjoy spirits. In fact, you've probably been enjoying spirits with a rye of some sort in it. Without even realizing it, you would know if you have a reaction to it, but most people can't.
Yeah.
If just know your brands and know your body, know your brands. And,
right. Know what you can handle. I do know someone who's celiac who knows for a fact that he cannot.
Ooh.
We're getting quite the storm here.
Yeah.
He cannot handle any gluten, grain based. Right. Alcohol. So he searches for specifically potato-based vodka.
Honey base is great. Bar Hill is what we're going to try. They make a vodka.
Tequilas that he knows exactly, you know.
Well, tequila has no grain in it.
Right. Which is why he knows he can do that.
Oh, I see. I was like.
But he doesn't. He has done that research is what I'm saying. So
Or corn. Corn is a great.
Right. Great I'm just intolerant. And my system can handle just about any of them. So I'm cool with it.
Right.
His cannot. So you just got to know.
I have a friend who drank Koval gin out of my house like water. That's what they drank, and they have a severe gluten intolerance.
Wow.
They're fine.
Yeah.
Again, know your body, know your brands.
Right, exactly.
Know your body, know your brands. If you are gluten intolerant, don't be afraid to take a sip. Mm-hmm. You'll know.
Oh, yeah.
You'll know.
You'll know.
Yeah, you'll know. So here we go. We're going to try Bar Hill Gin. This has... Juniper is a little bit more prevalent than some of these New West styles.
Ooh, wow. Yeah.
And the base is honey.
Mm.
Vermont-based company. They're getting their honey from the area.
I'm smelling a lot of grass.
Mm. You should. Well, I mean, anytime you have... like honey involved with something, you're gonna get elements of plant.
Yeah.
And then also juniper. Let's talk about what juniper is. Juniper berry it should actually be called juniper pine cone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's actually a pine cone.
Right.
That's why gin tastes like Christmas tree is brushing your teeth for you.
Yes. This one smells to me like a really, really young Christmas tree. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like I do the understand really, what you mean. Yeah,
the
like
really young ones.
Not too sappy.
A little sweet.
Yeah. That's right. I mean, I don't want to say things before you say them, but like, holy sweet. Very sweet.
That is really sweet.
Yeah. Nectar sweet.
It took a second, but then I got like a wash of honey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Totally not expecting that.
Yeah.
Again, I don't drink a lot of gin.
It started out very floral for me.
It is a lot sweeter than I expected.
Wow.
That is that honey-based neutral.
Literally,
sure.
It feels like I just stuck my tongue out and took a honey bear and just like squeezed it under my tongue. That is wild.
But good, right?
So good.
So good. Because it's so sweet.
That's dangerous.
This could stand up really well in a cocktail that had really herbaceous or floral or grassy elements to it.
This would be good with like crushed basil.
You know what's really good with? Bee pollen.
Oh, I bet.
Bee pollen. It's so good with bee pollen. I did a bee's knees, and I hard infused bee pollen with the egg white and the lemon juice and the honey. Actual honey.
Right.
And it was so good.
Wow.
It was so good. Give it this like crisp lemon lime soda y. It was great.
Interesting.
I'm going to hang on to that. I'm going to drink that later.
Can you put my.
I'll pour you more. Ooh. I'll pour you a couple ounces if you want to make a drink with it.
I might.
So, see, and now I can say that is a gin that I like.
That was absolutely delicious.
I did not ever expect to. And like it, like say, oh yeah, that is something I would order.
There is nothing in the world of spirits that people can't find something where they enjoy it. Absolutely, we all have taste. Absolutely, people can not like something or like a product. You know, that's very possible.
Right.
But there is going to be something out there where everyone can really get behind it and really enjoy it.
That was lovely, but it was very sweet.
Yes, and that's that honey-based neutral. Mm-hmm. You know, you make a different neutral. It's going to have different characteristics. So the rye neutral had a little vanilla. It was a little spicy. Mm-hmm. It had some onion on it, on the nose, like Maureen was saying. It's a very unique spirit. Wheat is going to be still kind of a little spicy, a little sweeter, a little easier, a little more bready. Mm-hmm. Potatoes going to be creamy and starchy and smooth. Grape-based neutrals are going to be acidic and sharp and crisp, like I talked about.
Right.
It just kind of depends.
Yeah.
But now we're going to move on to this other gin. So what we had before, made with a honey neutral, so it's going to be a little oddball, but for the most part, pretty traditional gin. Juniper is definitely the most prominent botanical we tasted in that gin.
Right, absolutely.
And it's a distilled gin.
Okay.
Moving on, we have here a compound distilled hybrid.
This one is blue.
It is quite blue.
It is like...
It is quite blue.
And it's like cobalt blue.
It is cobalt blue. Thank you. That's what
I wish looking. I had... the foresight with me to bring some like lemon wedges or lime because we'll talk about that later actually. So what we're drinking here is, again, it's a hybrid style gin where they did an 8 botanical blend, 6 of which including the juniper goes into the still, comes off the still, they proof it down, and they infuse 2 more botanicals in it.
Okay. It's not,
and it's blue.
And it's blue.
It's
so pretty.
It's very pretty. And like, I know that we've been saying that it's blue gin. It didn't come out of a blue bottle. I can't stress to our listeners enough how blue this is.
It's
blue.
It looks like, you know, when you were a kid and you dyed Easter eggs and you put the water and the vinegar and the little blue tablet in the cup. Yeah. That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
But the smell to me is not as strong juniper as the other one
muted.
Was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, Maureen, what you think of this, knowing your taste in gin.
I'm getting mint.
Yeah. Do you want to know what the botanicals are?
Mm-hmm.
It's really herby.
Let's hope I remember.
It's really herby to me.
It should be.
Okay.
It's coriander, juniper, uh-huh. rose, cinnamon, ginger, grapefruit.
Oh.
That's what goes into the still.
That's what I smell. Grapefruit.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell am I smelling?
Then there are two botanicals introduced after. A black tea. Like an actual black tea.
Okay.
Cool.
That mm-hmm. comes in after distillation where it's sitting and steeps. And another tea, which is the
dried
butterfly pea flower. Holy. It's the color.
Yeah.
It's the color. I was like, did you taste it? No. It's,
no.
Yeah, it's
no,
the color.
Butterfly tea tastes pretty neutral. But I can tell from the color, I was like, this reminds me of butterfly tea drinks.
Yeah. So it's butterfly pea flower is the botanical that gives it its vibrant color.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I want to have like a lemon wedge is because the
it
dye,
changes color.
It's so sensitive to acid. This is a pretty high pH, so it's, say, basic. And if you add acid to it, then it takes
it. Then it changes. Yeah, right.
So it goes from like this lavender, blue, indigo, cobalt, depending on the light, even like it just changes mm-hmm. so much to this like beautiful purple, like soft purple or like pink.
Oh, cool.
Tonic syrup will also introduce a color change. And fun fact, I learned tonic will glow under a black light.
Really?
Yeah, quinine.
Quinine glows, huh?
Under black light.
Quinine Glows is a great name for a band.
Quinine Glows
it
is
totally
a great name
is.
For a band. And so this is actually one of my brands that I represent in Chicago. It's called Empress 1908 Gin from okay. Victoria Distillers in British Columbia. It is a corn-based neutral.
Oh.
And the reason that you don't get a lot of that juniper and it's a little bit more earthy and a little bit softer, more floral and mm-hmm. more herbaceous and herbal is because they get their juniper from Croatia. And not to get into like the growing regions of the world for different mm-hmm. botanicals, but different areas of the world will produce different kinds of grains and different kinds of botanicals. So
right.
in Croatia, it's just this beautiful, soft, floral juniper, whereas other parts of the world are going to render pinier or sweeter
yeah.
or neutral. You know, like it just depends on where it's grown. So they sought this juniper out for this gin, and they made a beautiful gin. It's a really easy to drink gin. Makes a great gin and tonic. It's just nice. Easy drinking.
I really genuinely, I took another sip of it and I'm like, even knowing the flavors, I was like, this literally tastes like toothpaste to me. Like it's very good, but man, if it isn't very toothpaste
minty
to me. Yeah, very minty.
See, and I got so much like herb from it that I almost didn't like it at first. I think because it reminds me of some of the other herbal mm-hmm. liqueurs that my dear mother likes that I can't stand. But
oh, fair enough.
Not that I don't. I mean, as it sits on my tongue, I'm growing more fond of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And I could totally see enjoying a cocktail with it.
Oh, yeah.
It's
a cocktail gin.
It. Yeah.
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 I just took another sip of that honey gin.
It's so good. It's so good. Talking about what gin is, so you have this beautiful infused spirit. Gin can be made anywhere. There is no one location. To say that something is a London dry gin does not imply that it was made in London.
It's just
a style in which it was derived. In fact, mm-hmm. while the British have embraced gin and they talk about it quite a lot and they have their famous gin houses,
mm-hmm.
it actually came a little bit further away in that like Netherlands, Scandinavia area
okay.
of the world.
Right.
It was probably born of another spirit called Genever or however you pronounce it from wherever you are. But that was a juniper-based spirit, and that has all sorts of weird things added to it. It has all sorts of weird botanicals. It has sugar added to it. In fact, in that part of the world where it's made, Genever is required to have sugar added to it.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So gin, made from a neutral, infused beautifully, super nice. Is there any questions about gin?
No.
Cool.
I feel great about gin.
I'm glad you feel great about gin.
I feel better about gin than I did.
It's something that everyone should explore. You know, gin is a great cocktail spirit. If you're going to cocktail bars, if you're going to bars that have great cocktail programs, if you're staying at a fancy hotel, look for the gin cocktail because, quite frankly, it's going to be the one made with some of the most care because those flavors are pretty delicate. You know,
right?
You can't like, you know, aged spirits. You can throw coffee and lemon and thick juices and cherry and
And they vermouth, can hold up
like sweet vermouth and they can hold up. But think about gin drinks like the Martinez, which is probably the precursor to the martini. That's a gin based cocktail, one that has sugar in it, and they cut the vermouth in half with sweet and dry.
Wow.
So they're not, you know, you're introducing things that are just, you know, it's just you have to be more sensitive to what that gin is. But now moving on into the realm of sugar.
Cool.
We're going to talk about rum.
Yeah.
Rum.
And I have to get my notes out.
Yeah.
Because rum is weird. So, you know, we talked about rum yesterday. I asked you some questions. And,
yes.
So I want to get a little bit more involved with rum. So let's define it first.
Yes.
Rum is any spirit distilled from sugar.
Okay.
Byproduct. Sugar cane juice, molasses, any byproduct made from sugar. It's distilled to less than 95% ABV or 100 proof or 190 proof, excuse me. That is so it maintains some of those elements of flavor, those flavor congeners that are going to give it some character. And then it's typically bottled at 80 proof or above.
Okay.
Most spirits are typically bottled 80 proof and above.
Right.
And very often you will see them bottled at higher proof. Because last time we talked about this, more alcohol is more flavor. So vodka, typically bottled at 80 proof. 80 proof, 40% ABV. Everything else tends to fall above that in some capacity.
Okay.
So that's what rum is. And I will also say this. That standard, those metrics, is defined by the United States. So you go into the European Union, you go into other parts of the world, they might have slightly different...
Different standards. Okay.
Just kind of like we have different organic standards than, say, Spain does.
Right.
So, you know, little caveat, disclaimer to everything I say, I'm speaking strictly from a U.S. food perspective in terms of the law.
That makes sense.
And talk about rum, we're going to talk about different styles of rum. And... unfortunately, they're broken down into the kingdoms that once ruled these nations as little colonies.
Oh.
Yeah, it sucks. It's what it is. But I will say this too. While distilled spirits have been made throughout the world for a very long time, much longer than I think we would really even realize, the way in which rum was introduced to these colonies was a European style of distillation. So while I don't love it that we call it a Spanish style versus a otherwise more appropriate style, it does make sense because they did introduce their methods.
Okay.
So that's part of the reason why. It makes me sleep a little bit better at night. You know, I just count my blessings instead of sheep. And that's one of them. So a Spanish-style rum is going to be made in places like Puerto Rico, Cuba, Nicaragua, Colombia. And they're typically a little bit lighter, a little bit smoother. They're going to be making things probably unaged. They're probably going to make it from like a soft molasses or a whiter molasses, something that's not too thick. Or cane juice. Something like that. Then you have an English-style. Those are going to be from the English-speaking regions of the Caribbean. Think Jamaica, think Barbados, think Trinidad, Belize. And they're going to be, I think they're, you know, we know Bacardi, which is a Puerto Rican rum.
Yes.
But I think, personally, when I talk to people about rum, this English style of rum, this heavier, estery style of rum is more the palate that we associate with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bacardi, to me, is associated with terrible decisions I made as an 18-year-old. So to me, like, when you say Bacardi, I think, like, vomit and pizza. Like, that's...
Yeah.
100%.
That's what I think. But... Moving. Anyways.
Whatever. If you like Bacardi out there, you know what?
You like Bacardi out there? You do. There are some great things. You know what? There is no bar is complete without Bacardi 151, which is an overproof rum. So helpful in cocktailing.
I mean, we, once upon a time when I quote unquote bartended, we just used that as a topper to set drinks on fire.
That's actually, so actually, well, no, you know what? I can't. That's tangent.
Tangent.
Don't do that. Don't do that to me. And then there's a French style of rum.
Okay.
Just to cut off that tangent that I screamed about. There's a French style of rum. And then those are, you know, Martinique, those are Haiti, Guadeloupe. And these are going to be more often made from cane juice.
Okay.
It's often spelled with an H, so R-H-U-M.
Right.
And that's a distinct characteristic. When you make a rum from cane juice, typically it has a greener quality to it. Are you guys familiar with cachaça?
I've never had it, but
Brazilian style sugar based spirit called cachaça. It's a lot greener and herbaceous in quality in terms of taste than like you'd think of other rums, which are going to be thicker, more molasses driven. If it has a, like some floral notes, then you're thinking like white sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So the world of rum is wide and varied, and I can barely begin to bring you an example from each of these places. But what I thought I would do, the examples that I did choose to bring, was I brought something that was made from both molasses and cane juice in America. It's made in Philadelphia. And I brought you something that is aged from the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
And the Philippines also makes rum. Again, think of a more Spanish style.
Spanish style, yep. That makes sense.
Right, but the Philip. Well, we'll get into that later. So, anyways, what we have right now in front of us, this is a unaged gin. Nailing it, Ian. We have an unaged rum from Philadelphia, made from cane juice and molasses. So I'm kind of curious.
So I've been kind of smelling this and trying to pinpoint it while you were talking, and I kind of traveled from like, wow, this is very molassesy, to it's a little bit lighter than that. Maybe I'm getting more of like a really ripe strawberry, but it doesn't really have the berryness to it. Maybe I'm thinking of like a strawberry shortcake. Maybe I'm just thinking about pound cake, and I landed on pound cake.
Butter. I definitely got butter first.
Pound cake is a really great way to describe how this smells, and also how it indicate how it is made. With those two different products coming together. One thing I think about when I'm smelling this is light brown sugar. Not like brown sugar that we think of, like that lighter brown sugar. On the back it says light brown sugar, in fact.
Like the kind of brown sugar that you make chocolate chip cookies with, as opposed to like...
Brown sugar?
Yeah.
There's like raw sugar or demerara sugar. That's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. There's brown sugar, and then there is actually a light brown sugar.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yes, if that's what you're thinking, I make sugar cookies with dark brown sugar because I'm a monster.
Because it's delicious.
It's so good.
Because it's like just blocks of molasses.
Blocks of molasses. Yeah. Exactly. But that like where you have that. It's not quite as thick and syrupy a smell, but it's like buttery and has and pound cake.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not really, I would not discredit your strawberry. I do get like soft, mellow fruits, soft, mellow berries.
That's where I landed.
Rainier cherries.
That's because I was like, I'm not getting anything tart. I'm just getting sweet.
Yes. As well you should. And that's, now let's try it. Let's see what happens on the palate.
It tastes buttery to me.
Mm-hmm.
It does.
Mm-hmm. I get wood notes.
It's also very heavy.
Like, yeah.
Like, perhaps a couple seconds ago, you heard kind of like a labored inhale, and it's because it evaporated, it like vaporized on my tongue.
Yeah. What's the proof? I actually don't even know the proof. Oh, let's take a look. It was 45% ABV.
Yeah.
You know, it's higher proof.
Yeah.
Yeah, this has some body to it.
Wow, that's really nice.
And it has, I think it has like a wooden quality to it. Sugar cane juice is going to kind of give it a little bit more of a organic green flavor.
Yeah.
That's going to just kind of be natural about it.
Wow. It kind of fought me back. I took a sip.
Yeah, no, it does.
And I was like, oh, wow. And then I tried to take a breath and it was like, nope. Nah, I'm going to make this hard for you.
Yeah.
Not today.
And that is not in my lifetime of drinking rum. That is not a flavor I'm used to.
No.
That sort of like.
It's pretty bright.
Bright and buttery, which is a weird combo, but.
Yeah, but it's there.
Yeah.
You know, if we were to age that, think vanilla and like dried fruit notes that you get from the barrel, that would really mellow it out quite a lot. This would make, it makes great tiki cocktails.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it just really plays with those fruits so well. But now let's try something aged. So I have something, this is aged about, I want to say 4 years.
Okay.
It's not aged, it's aged in a very traditional style. It's aged in the Philippines, which is kind of hard to age in.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. I know, it smells so good.
It smells so good. It's like...
like bubblegum. Like cherry cola. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say these things.
No, you're right.
I shouldn't say... I try not to like to say anything when I'm introducing a spirit to bowl.
That is wild.
It's got that like caramely cola...
Holy shit. That smells so good. I like...
I want to go to TJ Maxx and find it in a candle and put it in my bathroom. Right? I want it so bad.
I want it everywhere.
Oh, God, just call me Tiffany and give it to me.
It smells like fall.
It does. It's great. Oh, my gosh. Like, can you imagine like a
cardamom and...
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God. That's so good.
It's a sexy little beast. I love this guy so much. I love it so much.
Oh, my God, it is.
Wow. No, it's just vanilla... vanilla.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's like,
that's really amazing.
It's but like, not like artificial, like the pretend vanilla flavoring that goes in things. This is like straight up, like strip a bean and stick your nose in it.
You know what this is like for me? It's like that old vanilla that my mom used to buy that was extracted out of the barrels of rum. Which, I mean, makes sense because this is rum. Like,
yes.
But it's that kind of like thick,
yes,
viscous smelling. It's very cool.
I'm excited to taste it, like mainly for the mouthfeel.
I want to pour it into like hot apple cider with a cinnamon stick.
Oh my God, that would be so good. Oh. I would like want to cook it down into a syrup.
Or like a buttered rum ball.
Oh my God. I'm going to pour this on pancakes.
Yes.
Yeah. I want to make it into a caramel and cover it in popcorn.
I want to have sex with it. I've not been spitting.
Oh, man.
I will likely not spit this one.
Yeah, no. Tear this from me, from my cold, dead lips.
And it's, like, easy to drink. Super smooth. Like we said, like, Spanish-style rums are super smooth.
So much fruit?
Yeah. So much fruit.
Like mango and orange.
That
and...
bubblegum thing?
Yeah. There it is.
Bubblegum.
And like,
oh,
and like for the people who are gonna like come after me for saying that, I'm also gonna say gum arabic and sorghum and like those kinds of things.
Yeah.
But I mean bubblegum.
No, fuck all them. Bubblegum.
It's bubblegum.
So good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's fucking delicious.
I am a fan.
That's amazing. What's the brand of this?
This is called Don Papa, from the Philippines.
Also, it's a beautiful bottle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Don Papa. Unfortunately, there's not a lot. I'm happy to give you samples of anything that you want after I leave, except for this, because it's...
You know what? That's totally fair.
Yeah, I make a rum old fashioned with this, and I get some high-proof bourbon and do like a half ounce of that.
Mm-hmm.
One and a half ounces of the rum, half ounce of that high-proof bourbon, some orange bitters, and just some easy Demerara syrup.
But this is one that, like, And again, growing up drinking rum, we drank a lot of rum and Coke. But rum and Coke is in, not like the Bacardian diet that you get in the bar, because ew.
Yeah.
Sorry, if you like that out there, you do you, but that's not my personal preference. But dark aged rum, preferably cane sugar sweetened Coke, you know, like the Mexican mm-hmm. Coke, lime juice, and Angostura bitters. Right. That is our drink. But this I would not do this that with.
No.
No, you gotta drink this one either like, you know, something especially made for it.
For it, straight. Yeah, yeah.
Just, you know what? Let's take a step back and just say, good quality ingredients, like good cooking. You know,
yeah,
you have a great piece of steak. You're not gonna throw a bunch of shit on it. You're gonna cook it for the steak,
and you're gonna let it be.
Yeah, same thing for anything. Like you have something good, just use good quality fresh ingredients, and you're good to go. You know. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I encourage people to drink like that anyways, because we're already putting an intoxicant into our body. Like, let's not ruin our livers. Let's just tickle them a little bit. Like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, because this is so good.
It's so good.
Wow.
Now, with rum, for the most part, the spirits that we've had up until this point, when we were talking about neutrals and gins, it's a really clean distillate for the most part. You know, you can have bad vodka, you can have bad gin. But there's not much you can really do to fuck it up.
Right.
Like, there's nothing that really has to be regulated other than flavor.
Okay.
In those things. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are things that we can talk about and really nitpick, especially if we are writing food law and you know, those kinds
of
things.
Right,
but we're not. We're talking about drinking it.
Yeah. Awesome. So I think we're going to end it there for today. But Ian has a lot more to tell us. So make sure you tune into the next episode, when we are going to continue with a couple more categories of spirits with Ian, and some more tasting and some more fun.